Welcome to Put Simply, the podcast that puts what's happening in the world simply without compromising on the details. Erdem Koch is my name, Ozan Ibrahim and Rodney McCune are my co-hosts. Gents, good to be with you again.
Good to be with you.
Good to speak, guys.
Well, one of the things that has caused controversy again and again in the United States is the case of Jeffrey Epstein, the sex trafficking financier who died in jail in 2019 in what was ruled a suicide. Why on earth is this relevant and why are we talking about it today? Well, there's something called the Jeffrey Epstein files. You'll hear it again and again in the US and indeed around the world. When US President Donald Trump ran for president, he promised to release these files, which some thought would even contain evidence of murder. In fact, a lot of people in the Trump base were saying this is yet another reason to vote for Trump. However, things have changed a little bit. Let's dissect this, Ozan, starting with explain to us what the Epstein files are and why they're causing so much controversy for Donald Trump.
Well, to put simply, I think this is one of the biggest political problems that that Trump has faced in the last 6 to 7 months, certainly since his presidency. And I think the reason for that is it's the one issue that cuts across his base like no other issue that the last 6 to 7 months. I mean, we've had tariffs, we've had all sorts of dodge expenses, the budget bill, etc. Obviously, the budget bill hasn't really, its political impact hasn't been seen, probably won't be seen for a while. But as you said, this issue was really at the heart of what motivated MAGA for many, many years. It's a conspiracy that the MAGA base has pushed for a very long time, suggesting that Jeffrey Epstein, who was a financier, a very wealthy businessman, was effectively running a child sex ring, and many of his customers were very well-known people. And there have been claims that that a number of Democratic, high-profile Democratic people are on his list of clients. There have been claims that Trump has spent a lot of time. In fact, Jeffrey Epstein was no stranger to Mar-a-Lago, and there's plenty of evidence to suggest that Trump and Jeffrey Epstein were good friends and attended many parties together. So the claim is that there is a file which contains a client list, and the file obviously contains other things like his private jet logs and other evidence that was used to convict him of crimes and sex crimes against minors, etc. Of course, as you mentioned, he passed away in prison as he was living out his term in prison, and there are other things which are contained in those files, and the client list is the one that has generated the most interest. And about 10% of those client list is already public, according to estimation, but it's the other 90% that's obviously raising a lot of interest. And it's important because it was a major issue and has been a major issue that's been pushed by the right-wing media in the US for a very long time, because of the fact that these, under the previous administration, these lists were not released, there were a number of different reasons given for that. However, Trump, J.D. Vance, Vivek Ramaswamy, and many other Republican leaders during the lead-up to the 2024 election made this a big political issue and claimed there's nothing to hide here for the Republicans or others. It's clear that there are names on there. Names like Bill Clinton have been thrown up and others. And it feeds directly into some of that MAGA base that's been claiming many, many things about this elite, this kind of deep state that's running the government, that's involved in all sorts of things, including child sex trafficking, etc. It's got a very QAnon type of feel to it. So big political issue. Trump is very hard about it. For a few months there, they're looking through it. Pam Bondi, who's the Attorney General, claimed that it was on her desk. She was reviewing it, etc. And then last week, there was a big bombshell announcement that basically Pam Bondi came out and others came out and said that there is no list that people are referring to. It had all been a lie, etc. And then the deputy director of the FBI disappeared for a few days because obviously. He before he became the deputy director of the FBI, he was a podcaster and he was very heavily involved in pushing a lot of this conspiracy stuff. So it's caused a big rift in the MAGA world. And then, for 3 or 4 days, there was a lot of MAGA debate about it, a lot of activity on X and other social media platforms where you had some very angry MAGA people who were really, really angry at the Attorney General. And then the President Trump came out and put out a Truth Social basically saying, actually, there is a list, but it's a hoax. It's a Democrat hoax. It was made, fabricated by the Democrats, et cetera. And so since then, it's really been quite a big issue on the US front, but also it's raising a lot of questions around some of the reasons for why it's been handled like this. Media reports suggest that Trump is very upset about this and very annoyed at various different people for creating a rift on this issue. He wants this issue to go away, but I suspect that this issue is not going to go away. I think this is a very, very major political problem for Trump, mainly because, maybe the MAGA people won't admit it, but a significant chunk of the MAGA base believes that this issue is a critical issue because it goes to the heart of what they believe. They believe that there's a deep state running everything and the state, the Biden administration and the Obama administration, et cetera, were all involved in a big conspiracy and a big cover-up of all of this. So it now puts Trump in the same position of covering something up that they believe very, very strongly.
But one thing that seems particularly on the right of this supposed cover-up and this grand conspiracy, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of his base necessarily saying that Trump is protecting himself. I mean, is that the feeling that you're getting, Rodney, in terms of why he's behaving this particular way, or is there something deeper going on here?
And so I think they don't see it that he has anything to hide, but they see that he's potentially succumbed to the dark powers of the deep state and isn't able to tackle them in the way that the conspiracy theorists probably expect or want them to, in the same way that, he was not going to get involved in Ukraine, but now he's getting involved in Ukraine. No more wars in the Middle East, but then he bombs Iran. So it's a part of a pattern of him slowly being compromised from his independent thinking and promise that he offered the base. I mean, on a basic electioneering point, it's an absolute winner to demand that your opponent or the establishment, as it was with the Democrats, disclose something that doesn't exist because allege cover up, and that's why they're not disclosing it. The problem is that when you get into position of power to disclose it, then you either have to say it doesn't exist yourself, at which point you look as if you've moved across the table to sit on the other side, or that it never existed when you look rather stupid, that you sort of were demanding this and this was a great attack on your opponent. So look, that's one possibility. The other possibility, of course, is that what's in it is so damning to all concerned that it's so bad that being subject to accusations of cover-up is not as bad as actually being as transparent as possible. So that also obviously exists as a possibility, but I don't think that's what they think. I think they think that he's been starting to be controlled by the state and not be able to do what he wants to do, because I think they still think that he wants to be transparent, but it's other people around him are failing him or whatever it happens to be. The damage might not just be with Trump, though. It might be politically with the likes of Vance, because he's also the one who isn't able to make this happen. He's not saying a great deal on it, and yet he wants that base to follow him potentially at the next election. So, the legacy for Trump is he's getting damaged by a base that aren't going to have to be asked to vote for him again. But the legacy for someone like Vance as part of the administration, a little bit like Kamala Harris and the cost of living, is that he's in there, he's in the war room or the leadership team, and he's not able to do anything with it either. And maybe one other point: it's not just about the list; it's about who's on the list or whose name appears in a piece of paper. Can be denied, explained in error, and all these other things. It's about whether there's genuine compromise material beyond that, in the form of other files which provide strong evidence to support not only was someone's name on a flight log, but they were involved in illegal conduct. So that's the other bit, which of course is what the list is the first step towards. But the belief about, and QAnon was a good example, the belief about the scale of the cover-up and the scale of the crime is such that no disclosure is ever going to satisfy some elements of that base, because there's always going to be, and what about the rest of it? And what about the next stage? And what about this stuff? And every time anyone misspeaks on it, with Pam Bondi saying there was videos that were being reviewed by the FBI, or someone saying there isn't a list and someone else saying there is, but it doesn't say anything. Every little bit of inconsistency is just being poured over by these people who believe there's a greater truth, or there's a deeper truth, or there's something that needs to be shared or disclosed to the public. It's a lose-lose situation for Trump and the administration, because they can never satisfy the disclosure. You must share, you must disclose, you must share everything. And then if they, fail to or say there's nothing there, well, that's a loss as well. So I think that Ozan's right that it's a political difficulty. It's one of their own making, and it's one that's going to create waves for others who want to get elected in the future, not just for Trump in the here and now.
There is an element that the Democrats are, of course, using to attack Trump by saying things like, the fact that the president used to party with Jeffrey Epstein, of course, he's not going to release the Epstein files. And then you've got, of course, the fallout between Elon Musk and Donald Trump, and Musk saying, well, the reason why Trump hasn't released the files is because he's named in the files. And then, of course, you've got the really, the MAGA supporters, the Charlie Kirks of the world, who are saying, you know what, we're done talking about Epstein for the time being. I trust my friends in the administration, is what he said on his podcast on Monday. Just do what needs to be done and solve it. But that's the thing. There is no solve it, Ozan, here, is there? I mean, if there was nothing to hide and there was no issues and there was absolutely zero implications and no problems, I think logic would dictate that it would have been released by now. But there is clearly something that is being protected, whether it's the offences, the horrendous offences, whether it's the alleged ties to the Israeli government and to Israel as a state, whatever it is, there is obviously something that is problematic, which clearly means that there's no easy way out of it, including trying to ignore it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think Charlie Kirk may want this to be over and done with, but there are significant elements of MAGA that have a very different view about this. And whatever he says or others say, they're not going to let this go, if you ask me, because it again goes to the heart of what they believe in. And the Trump campaign, many of his surrogates pandered to these. They entertained a lot of these conspiracies, including QAnon, etc. They gave this oxygen, and it's when you look at, and I think Rodney's absolutely right. When you look at the Biden administration's decision not to release this, the political calculus there was that, well, many of the people who are calling and throwing around these allegations, accusations, etc., are unlikely to be influenced by whatever we say, and are probably unlikely to come out and vote for us. However, Trump doesn't Trump can't say that because Trump needs these people and the MAGA movement needs these people to be engaged and on board because, you know, it's sad to say they make up a pretty significant chunk of the MAGA base and the MAGA movement. And, you know, it's not. And these people are not necessarily all just, you know, people sitting in basements developing conspiracy theories and believing it. Like it's people who are genuinely concerned that there is a cover-up. They're not all kind of, you know, tin hat conspiracy theorists. This is a big issue in the Republican party of 2025, and you know it's not going to go away. And I think that's something that they need to deal with. And as you say, Adam, they're clearly whether there is anything in that list or not, it's in some ways hard to believe that there isn't something there that is damning to someone or a big problem. Otherwise, you would release it. So clearly, there are some problems. Now, there are some theories going around and I'm saying that these are theories. I'm not necessarily arguing that they're true or not. But Ghislaine Maxwell, who is serving a very long prison term for being one of the enablers of Jeffrey Epstein, in fact, by many of the victims, she was apparently claimed as the kind of head groomer of these children who were trafficked for Jeffrey Epstein himself, but also his parties. Now she's facing a very significant jail term. She's, I believe, appealed that term, and her appeal is going to the Supreme Court and will be heard. So the theory is that you know she's ready to spill the beans because obviously much of the evidence that was provided to convict her in the first place was based on the so-called Jeffrey Epstein files, and within those files was kind of you know si significant evidence. Now, if that evidence is discredited and through the president's actions, you know, saying that it was fabricated or something like that by the Democrats, that gives her some serious grounds to go back and say, look, those files were false, and you know my trial was based on evidence from those files. So she has quite significant strong grounds to call for a mistrial, and she may get it, and then she might be trialed again without those evidence being permitted. So there's a bigger issue around that, and the relationship between Ghislaine Maxwell, who is a British socialite, and Jeffrey Epstein's kind of right-hand woman, and chief groomer. She's being labelled by others, not me. So this is not a topic or an issue that's going to go away like other things have gone away, because what we've seen is, you know, when these issues are hurting Trump and you have silence from the right-wing media and the MAGA media, these issues tend to go away just because of the fact that the media environment today is, you know, very fragmented. Corporate media is becoming less and less important in people's, you know, choices to get news. However, I don't see the right-wing media being quiet about this anytime soon. And if they continue to make a big deal of it, then, you know, the MAGA media feeds. Sorry, the MAGA movement feeds off that right-wing media, and we're likely to see this issue becoming a bigger and bigger problem, not just for Trump, but others, as Rodney said. You know, JD, it's no surprise that JD Vance is playing a moderator role between Pam Bondi and Bongiorno, the deputy director of FBI, because he sees that there is some significant political fallout from this, not just for him, but for the movement.
Well, speaking of fallouts and relationships and issues and all sorts of things that's troubling Trump, one of the things is, of course, his relationship with Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, who for a very long time was seen as an ally with Donald Trump, and obviously attempts to sit down with him and to do a peace deal and a bit of a ceasefire with what's happening in Ukraine has failed. And of course, Trump said multiple times that he would solve the Russia-Ukraine war very quickly. Clearly hasn't happened. But tell us about the relationship between Trump and Putin now, Rodney. In an overnight interview with the BBC, he said that he is disappointed with the Russian leader and that, you know, he is looking to really sort of, I guess, make things a little bit better and a little bit easier, but he's not done with him. Is this just sort of classic Trump, just sort of neither here nor there with what his views are about other leaders, or is there a bigger issue that we need to explore here?
I think, like anything with Trump, there's the words and the actions, and they can often be very different, and the gap between them can be significant. And a lot of Ukraine watchers are skeptical that there'll be any real follow through with this. Obviously, there's a suggestion they've created a device where weapons can be channeled through NATO. Europe pays for them. So the bit about the US funding Ukraine falls away, and it's easier for him to satisfy that campaign commitment and yet still deliver militarily. It also probably reflects that Ukraine militarily is in a more vulnerable position than they have been for a significant period of time. But yeah, I mean, but I think probably my favorite line in the whole thing was, and he said, many people are disappointed that they thought that Vladimir wanted to negotiate a ceasefire and peace, and they're surprised that, you know, he's doing different things. He's now saying one thing during the day and bombing people at night. The truth is that no one was surprised apart from Trump. Everyone else who's a Ukraine watcher anticipated that Russia didn't want to actually work towards a ceasefire, and that the party that invaded the other country aggressively was not the person who was the potential peacemaker. But I do think it comes back to his own desire for self praise, where he becomes a Nobel laureate with the Peace Prize, and he wanted to bring peace to Ukraine, so therefore he had the Ukraine-Russia situation, so he attacked the weaker party, thinking that that would in some way bring about a deal, because he saw Putin maybe like himself, who doesn't really want conflict and wants to be seen as a deal maker, and therefore he was making it easier for Putin to make a deal, to find out that he's different than him. And I think that that sort of dictated all the foreign policy approaches in the early stages of the administration. But now that he can't do that, he's having to backtrack in a way that doesn't force him to lose face on his commitment of not funding Ukraine. And at least that bit, he has some sort of big leaf of consistency. But yeah, I mean, everything he's always said is subject to change, and everything he does say is subject to change, and therefore no one can be quite sure what will happen next, other than Ukraine will get some additional military support, likely funded, as I said, by Europe, but bought from America. What difference that makes for Ukraine in terms of being able to sustain fending off Russia, that's maybe the high point. Whether it slowly opens the door to more significant US military support, I guess, remains to be seen. But it's like Epstein, it's like Iran, it's like all the other things where the MAGA cheerleaders or the Trump cheerleaders are having to go out and restate and sell a different message than the one that they were campaigning on months ago.
I mean, I think it's, the bromance is well and truly over. The second bromance, of course, after Elon Musk. I think that at the end of the day, Trump has realized that politically, the longer this thing goes on, he looks weaker and weaker in not being able to deal with Putin. And I think, before the election, the whole, let's end this war. Let's not support Ukraine. Let's not give away taxpayers' money to Ukraine. Some of these arguments run by the MAGA base around, well, Russia had the right to defend itself against NATO expansion, all this sort of stuff, was pretty powerful for a certain element of the electorate. But I think Trump is quickly realizing that this issue has become a tier four or five issue compared to all of the other topics that he's having to deal with. Obviously, Iran was a recent example of probably a much more important topic for the domestic, the US domestic case. So I think he's realized there's no point in you know, expending political capital on this and trying to defend the indefensible. Let's bring about a deal. And I think that's what is happening. And, you know, it's no surprise that that after he got what he wanted out of the NATO members, he's much more open to now allowing NATO to be the kind of intermediary or the middle man or woman, whatever you want to call it, to supply the weapons that Ukraine needs. And of course the further tariffs on Russian goods, which is kind of not a very you know, convincing type of stick, I guess, considering that, you know, there's still some very heavy sanctions on Russia. So, but I think it's the weapons that really kind of indicate his desire to make this issue go away politically.
Maybe one other point, Lausanne, is the threat of tariffs against those who continue to buy Russian energy. So,
correct.
You know, potential impact on Brazil and others.
Correct.
That's something which is probably more significant than the threat of tariffs against Russia. Yeah. Coordination around sanctions would make a difference as well. And I don't know whether that really features as part of this. The problem with the whole tariffs argument, whether it's against Russia or whether it's against someone like Brazil, the threat for those who import Russian energy, is all of the tariff stuff has been pretty... what was the phrase I heard someone describe it as the other day? All hat and no cattle. I think it's a Texan phrase.
I wouldn't know any Texan phrases.
So, yeah, I think it was all... I would think it was he's got the hat but no cattle. And maybe that's a little bit of, yeah, all... light and no heat, I guess, is the other version of it.
I'm sure there's some Australian or British equivalent of that saying.
Yeah, I'm sure there
I
is.
I think of right now.
but you know, so I don't know whether it's just another hollow threat on tariffs or whether it's something that can be carried through. One thing, though, is it makes it more difficult for his opponents who are opposed to this sort of wider tariff agenda to criticize him if it's targeted tariffs for a, like we discussed months ago, you know, for a specific foreign policy outcome that's not related to raising revenue, you know, because raising revenue, reshoring, causing someone else to do something that they wouldn't otherwise have done, all part of, you know, the threat of tariffs and so on. And if it falls into that category, perhaps it makes it more difficult for people to say tariffs are bad, full stop. They'll have to concede at some point or to some degree that the tariff agenda has some potential value in being used as a foreign policy tool.
Well, speaking of tariffs and whether they're on and off and what the implications are and what's actually going to happen, of course, I've lost count the number of times we've spoken about it on this podcast, but it really is the gift that keeps on giving. It's sort of on again, off again. Is it coming? Is it not? What are the implications? How will the markets react? What's the latest on this front, Ozan, from a US perspective and the impact on the rest of the world, particularly looking at, you know, continents like Asia or the EU as well? Take us through the latest on that.
I mean, put simply, I think we touched on this last week. President Trump had his own deadline of 90 days since the Liberation Day announcements in early April. He was going to make 90 deals within 90 days. He's made what he claims to be two deals, but I guess the jury's out on those with the UK and Vietnam. And, you know, he's effectively sent a bunch of letters to countries and told them that they have been mistreating the US, taking advantage of the US. Effectively, the letters look like his, you know, regular Truth Social posts, you know, in big caps, saying that, you know, you will no longer be able to take advantage of us, etc. So he sent a whole bunch of letters out to people, and I think we touched on it last week. threatening with 25% tariffs, in the case of Japan and South Korea, and others as well. Overnight, there's been threats of 30% tariffs against the EU, and EU is saying they'll have a look at that, and they're happy to talk, etc. And he's put a deadline of the 1st of August, saying that that's when these tariffs will come into place. What's very interesting, though, is I think some of the geopolitical ramifications of this, and with the exception of Vietnam, many of the Southeast Asian countries, for example, have been hit quite significantly. Malaysia being one of them has gone up from 24% in the April Liberation Day announcement to 25%, despite all the work that the Malaysians had done. Indonesia is significantly being impacted with, I think, 36%. Tariffs. So, and the same for Thailand as well. Sorry, Indonesia's 32% and Thailand is 36%. And despite both Thailand and Indonesia trying to make significant deals with the US, in some ways miscalculating the transactional nature of the administration's stance towards them. I think if you're in the part of the world where, it's a very easy equation, you can make a very transactional based type of deal with the Trump administration. But when you're in when you're in Indonesia or Thailand to a certain degree, in Malaysia to a certain degree, obviously there are bigger issues at play, such as your relationship with China, your not just economic relationship, but your political relationship with China. And obviously, this is something that the Trump administration values when it comes to these countries who are strategically important for the US, in its dealings with China. So they've been at this point in time punished quite significantly. And it'll be interesting to see what they come back with. It'll be interesting to see what Japan comes back with on the whole 25% threat. And I suspect that we'll be talking about this in 2 weeks when the 1st of August deadline comes up.
Comes and goes.
Exactly.
Malaysia's been doubly punished because they've sent that clown as ambassador. Is he confirmed? Is he not Australian?
Yeah, we like to take pride in many of the exports that we put out of Australia, but I've got to say he's one that the least kind of cause for pride. For those listeners who may not be aware, a gentleman. I can't remember his name. I mean, he's so irrelevant, but a major blogger. Apparently he claims that he's the favorite author of Donald Trump, Australian born and American by choice, as he claims. And he makes many other claims as well. He's been put forward as the ambassador to. And I would perhaps look at some of the things that he's put on his. On his Truth Social and other kind of X, probably. His name is Nick Adams. One of his kind of famous X posts from 2023, which has had quite a bit of publicity, is I can read it out to you. I go to Hooters, I eat rare steaks, I lift extremely heavy weights, I read the Bible every night, I'm pursued by copious amounts of women, I'm wildly successful, I have the physique of a Greek god, I have an IQ of over 180, I'm extremely charismatic. They hate this. So quite a humble guy, as you can tell, I think he'll go well in that part of the world.
Remarkable character.
Well, I mean, I should also say that there are other posts that he's made in the past that are, some claim have been quite right-wing and Islamophobic and what have you. So it's certainly an unorthodox choice and an interesting choice for a Muslim-majority country.
Well, speaking of interesting choices and unorthodox movements, we have the world's oldest president, or about to be the world's oldest president, or perhaps he already is, running for office yet again. Ozan, if you're 92 years of age, surely it's time to put your feet up, isn't it?
I would say so. I mean, if I'm lucky to make it to 92, running a country would be probably the last thing on my on my agenda. However, to saying that, perhaps he's just such a driven man that much like, for example, the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, Mohamed Mahathir, who came back to power after being Prime Minister for a very long time at the age of 93. He's now 100 and still going. Maybe it's time to let go of all of those anti-aging creams and all of the different supplements and solutions that people use to prolong their life. Just enter politics. It seems to be the adrenaline hit that that we all need to for a long long and healthy life.
I've got more of a cynical view of these things. I think the ones who want to stay in the very old age are the ones who don't want the successor administration to uncover the corruption and remove all the unearned wealth from their children. And it tends to suggest that there's some, and I'm not saying it by obviously this distinguished chap, but it's not uncommon for those who run dynasties of political dynasties and so on, of wanting to ensure that they stay there long enough to protect not their political legacy, but their accumulated wealth.
Look at you being all serious. I was just trying to have
a bit of a
lighthearted angle on this, but you're absolutely right.
If he sets out a 10-year vision, I'll be impressed.
No, exactly. I think, President Paul Biya, who is running for his 8th term in Cameroon, I'm pretty sure has other interests in mind rather than trying to prolong his life. You are absolutely correct.
And before we sign off this week, one thing you're keeping an eye on, Ozan, is the riots that are happening in a small city in Spain, which could, of course, be spreading very, very soon. Tell us what is happening there.
Yeah, it seems that for the last 3 or 4 nights, there have been riots between kind of fights between, or clashes, whatever you want to call them, between far-right groups and migrant groups, particularly migrants from North Africa, in quite a small part, which is in the southeastern Spain. It's called Torre Pacheco. My Spanish pronunciation is not great. It comes after a gentleman was attacked a few weeks back. Last week, by a group of people, and it was claimed that this was an attack that, it was a pensioner who was attacked, and it was claimed particularly on social media and other places, and really kind of spurred on by right-wing groups, that this attack took place by a group of migrants of North African origin, and this gentleman was beaten up pretty badly, and the gentleman claimed that they were shouting in a language that he didn't understand, etc. So this kind of fueled a very, very significant response amongst the far right groups, and they pushed a lot of people and got them out onto the streets, and in response, I believe a number of migrant groups came out, and we have what is apparently one of the biggest flare-ups of kind of racial-based riots in Spain for quite a long time. So something to be, I suppose, watching, concerned about. But again, it's not very, very, surprising that you have a lot of these sorts of things flaring up, not just in Spain, but in other places as well, as the far right is gaining more and more momentum. Many of the different economic problems that people are facing within the country are being blamed on migrants and immigration policies generally. The kind of ground has been prepared for some time for these sorts of things to flare up and turn into these sorts of clashes.
Yeah, it's not something that's incredibly uncommon, unfortunately, but let's see where that takes us. Gents, that's all we have time for this week on Put Simply. Wonderful talking to you both. See you next.
Thanks, guys.